This is the second installment in my series, Investing Like Warren Buffett. In my first segment, I interviewed Bud Labitan, who, through extensive research, devised what he calls the four filters of Buffett and Munger. Today, my guest is Scott Thompson, chairman and CEO of Ameritrust Group, and he himself, as well, is a disciple of value investors Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, among others. And we're here to discuss his book, Art and Science of Value Investing, Invest Like Billionaire Warren Buffett. Hey, Scott, first time on the show. I welcome you to the show.
Thanks, Steve. Glad to be here.
You know, I see that Peter Buffett, Warren's son, has written the foreword to your book, which is quite an accomplishment on your part. I know Peter is not really an investor. He's chosen a completely different path. Why did he write the foreword?
Sure. Peter and I have been friends since 2009, where we met at a nonprofit event in the Midwest, and we've kept in touch and met maybe three or four times a year, every year since then, as well as doing video chats once a month. And, you know, I discussed the book with Peter and sent him, you know, the content. And, you know, Peter was interested in the book, but I think what really interested him and made this book more special, and the reason why Peter decided to write the foreword, is because chapter 16 of my book, Art and Science of Value Investing, it's a chapter called Responsible Philanthropy. And right now, Peter is very focused with his wife, Jennifer, on responsible philanthropy. And their foundation, the Noble Foundation, is rated, you know, one of the top foundations in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think what really interested him is, in addition to the quality content in the book, is that after readers learn how to make the money, this is really one of the few books that teaches, you know, how to responsibly give it away.
Yeah, and Buffett had said very early on that he was going to give away the majority of his wealth, and he has done so working with Bill Gates and
right.
his foundation and the like. So he's, in a sense, written his own book, or let's say forged his own path, away from what kind of common thinking was for all these multi-billionaires. Let's get
right.
to the book. So one thing that struck me is that, you know, whenever you listen to Warren Buffett, you know, I don't know what questions he'll answer when you have lunch with him that you pay $1.2 million for, you know, but
right.
to the rest of us, he basically will never tell you what his investing strategies are. I mean,
sure.
we kind of know in general, we kind of know the work of Ben Graham, his mentor, and so on. But there was this one thing that he mentioned in his 2011 annual report for Berkshire Hathaway that you bring up. It's called the two-column valuation method. And I was like,
right.
wait, what is this? This is like...
right.
You know, the first time. So, first of all, since he never specifically talks about investing formulas, what was all of that about? What can we learn from the two columns?
Sure. Well, in my book, Art and Science of Value Investing, in Chapter 9, I discuss in detail Warren Buffett's two-column method and how it works. The two-column method is based on two valuation columns. One column is pre-tax investments, which is found on the balance sheet. And the second column is pre-tax operating earnings. And investors can assign a multiple. For example, a conservative multiple might be something close to 10 on the pre-tax operating earnings. So if we multiply the pre-tax operating earnings by a multiple of, say, 10, and then add the pre-tax investments, those two columns added together would give evaluations.
Well, for most of my listeners, I think that probably went right over their heads.
Okay.
So let's take that and break that down just a little bit. So when
sure.
we talk about pre-tax earnings, that's very simple. It's the earnings that a company earns, but before they pay taxes on it, right?
Correct.
So that's pretty easy. And then the value of their investments, is that what you said?
Right. And those are the assets like cash and cash equivalents
okay.
and bonds. And those can be found on the balance sheet
right.
at the top.
And so then you want to assign a multiple, meaning that a business is going to sell for some multiple of earnings. And in this case,
right.
pre-tax earnings, you say the multiple is 10, which is very conservative because I think, you know, the S&P 500 is probably somewhere around 18 times or more of, you know, trailing earnings. So 10 is a very conservative multiple.
Exactly.
So you multiply the earnings times that. But of course, the S&P, that's also after tax. So it's not quite as conservative. Anyway, you multiply that. You get a number, you add up all the assets on the balance sheet, you get a number, you add them two together, divide that by the number of shares outstanding, and there you go. There's one valuation.
That's exactly correct. And the strength of my book, Art and Science of Value Investing, is that it takes complex subjects like what we're discussing and really breaks them down into very simple elements
yes.
and communicates them to the readers in ways that are very easy to understand.
Yeah, by the way, I would totally agree. This is a great first book and second and third book for anybody who's interested in parsing out the investing strategies and ideas of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. And this is a great place. He's got examples of specific companies and how to think about the balance sheet and so on. It's a great first book. I'm going to start recommending it.
Thank you, Steve.
To people who ask me for, which I do, I get all the time, you know, clients come in, they go, you know, can you recommend a good book? And I have a group, and this is going to be one of them. Let me ask you this question. Why doesn't Warren Buffett buy new businesses, buy startups, buy these exciting companies like, you know, Facebook or Google? Not that that's a startup anymore, sure. But you think he would be on the forefront of that? How come he's not?
Sure. Well, to be consistent and take a complex subject and communicate it simply, let's say you and I, Steve, are at a hospital at a maternity ward, and you and I are looking through the glass at all the rows and rows of all the newborn babies. And let's pretend that, you know, instead of babies, they were businesses, you know, they're newborns. You know, I'm not smart enough to know which of the babies is going to be a millionaire because they all, you know, look, yeah. You know, they're newborn babies. So it's hard to really differentiate and tell which ones are going to be the winners. You know, startup businesses are the same. You know, to look at a number of startup businesses, you know, it's very, very difficult to look at a startup business and decide, you know, of these 10 or 20 startup businesses, which one is going to succeed.
Yeah.
So what Buffett tends to, his approach that he takes is, in his investing, is he looks at businesses that have long established track records of, you know, increasing earnings, free cash flow. And free cash flow is what Warren Buffett refers to many times in his annual reports as owner earnings, because the free cash flow is actually the earnings that the investors would receive.
Yeah, well, it's the cash. You're taking out non-cash items like depreciation and
That's
capital
right.
spending and things like that, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So getting back to, you know, your analogy of the babies in the maternity ward. Now, you know, Scott, if it was your baby there, of course, you would know that baby.
Right. Right? That's right. And that would be the bias. But, you know, we would prefer to wait until maybe the baby grows to be, you know, 7 years old and see if they get a newspaper route or a lemonade stand and maybe through college and if they, you know, start a business
yeah.
after college and how enterprising they are.
Mm-hmm.
But, and that's the approach Warren takes with his investing. Instead of investing when the business is a startup, he would wait and look for established businesses like Coca-Cola. You know, they've been in business for, you know, over 100 years,
right.
and they have a history of, a long-term history of increasing earnings.
Mm-hmm.
And that investment has worked out very, very well for Warren, obviously.
Well, here's another question for you. So back in 2009 and 2010, gold was incredibly hot.
Right.
You know, I think it had reached something like $1,800 or almost maybe $1,900 an ounce.
That's right.
And of course, everybody wanted to invest in gold, yet Warren Buffett said no, he would not do that. Why wouldn't he invest in gold?
Sure. That's a great question, Steve. Warren prefers to invest in new productive assets, like, you know, businesses. And for example, in 1962, when Warren first started buying shares of Berkshire Hathaway in 1962, he started buying the shares at $7.49 a share. Well, in the same year, in 1962, gold was right around $35 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
And from 1962 to today, gold has appreciated by a 35x return. And over the same period, from 1962 to today, the Berkshire Hathaway stock has increased by almost 29,000x return.
Wow.
So when you compare the 35x with gold, that's a great return. However, 29,000x, you know, Warren with Berkshire Hathaway has really, it's really outstanding and absolutely incredible, the financial performance that Warren has been able to accomplish year after year after year.
You know, someone said to me once that back in Roman times or in Greek times, you know, an ounce of gold would buy a good toga.
Right.
But today it still buys just a very good suit, you know. So, but I think the key to what you said is that Buffett is looking for assets that are productive, that actually produce something that you can measure, and you can actually take that cash flow that you're receiving, project it into the future, and put a number on it and come up with maybe some inkling of a future valuation, whereas gold doesn't actually produce anything. As a matter of fact, gold costs you because you have to store it
right.
and so on. So it doesn't give you a dividend. It doesn't give you anything back. So in a sense, gold is a speculation. Now, what is the difference in Warren Buffett's mind between an investment and a speculation? Where is that line?
Sure. That's a great question, Steve. So in the difference between speculation and investing, speculation may be something more of what we say in the business is a whisper stock. If, you know, you overhear a conversation or someone says, you know, you should buy ABC company or XYZ company, you should invest in that stock. And people, investors really don't spend the time to really delve in to do the research. And that's more of a speculative investment, where an investment is where a value investor will really actually spend the time, you know, read through the financial statements, look at the news articles, read the annual reports, and really dig down deep into understanding the business. Because after all, you know, stocks are not lottery tickets. And this is an important point I want to make. You know, stocks are not lottery tickets. Instead, they're fractional ownership shares of the underlying business. So really, that's the key to understanding value investing, is you're actually buying a fractional ownership share of the underlying business when you own a share of the stock. So investors should, you know, take the time to understand the business. And, you know, a lot of people with assets, they don't have time to invest. So if they don't have the time, they should find professionals like, you know, yourself and others who could intelligently help them allocate that capital.
Yeah. You know, it's said that education costs money. If you do it yourself, it's going to cost you. And I'll tell you, in investing, that can actually cost you dearly. You can go to school and you can learn it, or you can pay a professional. But either way, it's going to cost you money. So don't think that just by doing it yourself, especially in the investing world, that it's going to be low cost or even free.
Right.
Which, you know, gets me to another question here, is investors' temperament. And this is the thing. Now, I've been in the investing world for 35 years, own my own fee-only advisory practice for 20 of those years. And the one thing that I know for certain when it comes to investors is that it's not the market which fails them, because investing in the market over time really plugs into the growth of the American capitalist movement, so to speak.
Right,
so
right.
Our standards of living rise, that's reflected in the average shares that are available to investors. So it's not that. If you, you know, just kind of stay put, if you were Rip Van Winkle and fell asleep for 20 years, you'd wake up richer. But it's the investors themselves that fail. Why do so many investors fail? What does that have to do with temperament?
Sure. Great question, Steve. As far as in temperament, most investors tend to follow the herd. So you remember back in the late 90s, early 2000s, the dot-com stocks, you know, all the dot-com boom, and a lot of investors, you know, got swept up in the craze of the day and invested in these dot-com businesses. And there really wasn't a business behind it. It was just an idea without any earnings. They had extremely high price-to-earnings multiples. You know, some had negative earnings, and the companies went out of business and the investors lost their money. So during that time, you know, Warren Buffett stayed true to his value investing beliefs and went against the crowd. And people were saying things like, you know, you're a dinosaur.
Yes.
You're washed up. But, you know, then after the dot-com stocks crashed, you know, Warren looked like a genius.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I remember that very clearly. And people were saying, you know, Buffett, you're investing basically in sugar water, you know, Coca-Cola.
Right.
I mean, what the heck is that? That's so old-fashioned and so on. And yet, and actually, we're seeing it today in a lot of these pre-IPO companies that are involved in this new tech revolution that we're truly experiencing. That's real.
Sure.
And I think that's an actually important point, that the revolution can be real, but the companies that actually survive and thrive, you can never really predict which ones those are going to be.
Yeah, that's true. And to emphasize your point, Steve, for the topic of temperament is, you know, investors should not follow the herd, and they should be able to walk they should be able to walk away from any deal at any time.
Yeah.
And a lot of times investors, they have an inability to control their emotions.
Right.
And the best temperaments for value investing tend to be really even keel, you know, tempered people, that they don't really get to never too high emotionally or never too low. There's very level-headed, even keel people. And during the most recent market decline in 2008, after the crash in 2009, Warren Buffett invested into Goldman Sachs around $115 a share. Well, what immediately happened after Warren invested billions into Goldman Sachs at 115? Well, the stock went down to somewhere in the 60s, mm-hmm. So a decline of about 50%. So value investors have to have a temperament that they stay true to their investment thesis, no matter what the price is. If you know what the underlying valuation is of the business, price fluctuations are going to occur, but investors need a temperament that's going to allow them to make it through the price fluctuations as the stock price converges more with the underlying intrinsic value.
Well, I think it all comes back to understanding what it is you own. If you don't understand the business and you're just buying it because you read a good article and it seemed, you know, enticing, the growth prospects seem good, don't kid yourself. you really are speculating. You're really not investing. Hey, Scott, unfortunately, we're out of time. My guest, Scott Thompson, Chairman and CEO of Ameritrust Group, and his book, The Art and Science of Value Investing, Invest Like Billionaire Warren Buffett. I think you all got a sense of the way Scott puts things together and the value of this book. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Steve.